When she was 16 years old, Leah Vincent exchanged letters with a boy she had a crush on. Typical behavior for a teenage girl, but not for one growing up in the Jewish ultra-Orthodox yeshivish community. Leah had broken the religious law that forbids contact between boys and girls. And when her parents found out, they cast her out of the family, sending her to New York City to fend for herself. In the years that followed, Leah struggled to define herself as an independent secular woman, and she's written a sometimes shocking memoir called Cut Me Loose, Sin and Salvation, After My Ultra-Orthodox Girlhood. It is published by Doubleday and the Nan A. Talese imprint, and I'm very pleased it has brought her to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
You were raised in a family of 11 children in Pittsburgh. What is yeshivish Judaism? Is it a form of Hasidism?
It's not. So if you look at Orthodox Judaism in general, you can really divide it into three groups. There are the modern Orthodox, who live very strict religious lives, but also exist in the wider world. Then you have the Hasidim, who are more well-known, perhaps because Hollywood has taken a liking to them and they're more identifiable in dress. And then you have the yeshivish Jews, who are, like the Hasidim, very strict with their understanding of religious law, and that's a huge part of their lives. But they're culturally very different than Hasidim.
In what ways? What's the role of the man and the woman in the community?
One of the big ways that they're different than the Hasidic community, for example, is that the Hasidic community generally speaks Yiddish. The yeshivish community speaks English. But one thing that's common to the yeshivish world is the men and women do have very separate roles. The men learn in yeshivas, which is where the name yeshivish comes from, which are these study halls. And life really revolves around the men and their studies.
Now, the men and women live relatively segregated lives, but that's not all that different from Hasidic groups or fundamentalist Christians, some fundamentalist Christians, Muslims, Hindus. Is there something unique about the attitudes about the relations between men and women in the yeshivish community?
I think that's actually more in common than unique. I think that a lot of fundamentalist communities share these kinds of values where men and women have very traditional roles and are kept very separate.
And women wear very modest clothing.
Yes.
Do they wear their heads covered?
Once a woman gets married, she'll cover her hair with a wig most often.
What was your childhood like? You seemed to not be the most obedient of all children. Why?
I actually was a very obedient child. So the book doesn't cover this part of my life as much. I was incredibly devout. I really believed in our way of life and tried to preach it to others. I think it was really adolescence that things started taking a turn. And maybe perhaps because I was so devout, I saw some hypocrisies and they really got under my skin. And when I started pushing back against the rules, very quickly I generated a pretty big response.
And how did you even come in contact with kids who weren't part of the community?
I didn't really. So when I was 15, my parents sent me to England to a much stricter ultra-Orthodox school. And I had a classmate there who was a little less yeshivish than my family was. She had an older brother who was more modern Orthodox. And that was, in a way, my first taste of really considering the ideas of other religious communities beyond the one I was raised in.
But you were a rabbi's daughter.
Yes.
So you were expected to act in the most proper way.
Yeah. And like I said, as a kid, I took that so seriously. I loved and love my father and wanted very much to make him happy. It was really only once adolescence kind of exploded in me that I started to push back.
And you started hearing about things like going to college?
Yes.
That would have been totally impossible if you just stayed in the community?
Yeah. So, I mean, I knew about college. I grew up in Pittsburgh. It's not a big ultra-Orthodox Jewish community, but I hadn't really thought about it till I was a teenager. And as I talk about in the book, when I said to my mom, you know, I think I want to go to college, she was not happy with that. And, you know, she responded pretty viciously.
And why do you think there's resistance to college? Not just in this community. I just saw a film about the Amish. If you want to go to college, you wind up leaving the community.
I think there's a couple different reasons. One is that you really gain exposure to other people and other ways of life. And if you're in your early 20s when you're forming your identity, that can be dangerous if you're trying to keep people in the fold.
You became friendly with a boy who wasn't part of the community. How did that happen?
So this was my friend's older brother. And so I became friends with her, and he had chosen not to live this yeshivish lifestyle, but to be more modern Orthodox. I was 15, 16, and I developed a crush, as 15, 16-year-old girls will do.
And then you told your mother you wanted to go to college.
Yes.
What was her reaction?
She said, absolutely not. And I said, you know, fueled by my adolescent chutzpah, like, I'm going to go. And she said, if you try to go, we'll have you locked up.
So they hoped that you would just change?
I think they hoped that if they responded really firmly, that I would back down and give up my rebellion.
But then they wound up sending you to New York City.
Yes.
Was this like sending you to London in hopes that the people there might put you into shape?
I think it was more that this is just sort of what happened when you grow up out of town, as we called it, away from the large ultra-Orthodox communities. You got sent to New York when you reached marriageable age. It happened to all my sisters.
So there were the large community. Where is the yeshivish community in New York?
In Brooklyn.
What part of Brooklyn?
Flatbush, mostly.
So are you, were you on your own, or did you just join other people in that community?
I was totally on my own. By then, I had already been branded a rebel. And I was a pretty shy girl and pretty shaken up by my rebellion and didn't know how to connect with people and really felt incredibly isolated.
And how old were you?
I was 17.
How did you get by?
My parents did help me, put me in touch with some people. I got a job that paid minimum wage. I had a tiny little apartment.
And you were very lonely, as you write. You rarely talked to your mother, never with your father, had no friends.
Yeah.
How did you deal with that?
Not very well. It was incredibly crippling and isolating.
And also, you wound up doing the sort of things that people do when they're unhappy like that. You started cutting, and you had suicidal thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, that happened much later in the story. Well, not much later, but after a couple other things happened that I talk about, some really traumatic experiences that just exacerbated by my loneliness and the fact that there was no one to talk to about anything that was happening to me led me to start to self-destruct.
And actually go into a hospital.
Yes.
Voluntarily. So here you are alone, and boys were the big problem.
Yes.
So you're free to interact with men. What was your relationship with them like?
So on one hand, it was very empowering. You know, I had been rejected by everybody I cared about, and men seemed to be interested in me and seemed to validate me, and that was wonderful. On the other hand, I had no tools to deal in any healthy way with men, and so I quickly accumulated a long list of really unpleasant, bad relationships and encounters.
In fact, you didn't realize that you'd lost your virginity as a result of something like a rape from the local drug dealer.
Yeah, I didn't have the words for understanding what had happened to me and didn't really know how to make sense of it. Like, I wasn't even sure what had happened was sex. And I definitely didn't call it rape because I didn't know that that's what that could be.
And he also gave you PID, so...
Yes.
That was a disastrous relationship.
It was.
Did you date many men after him?
Yes, although dating is a little bit of a generous of a term. Like I said, I didn't really know how to have a normal relationship. I had expected that I'd go on a couple of arranged dates when I was 18 and get married and didn't know how to navigate a more free-form relationship.
While I was reading the book, I was wondering about talking with you about these things because they have to be kind of painful to talk about.
Usually painful.
So, but at this point, because you've written about them, you feel that it's a little easier, or to some degree, do you see this Leia that you've written about as somebody different from the person you are?
Yes, there's definitely sort of splitting where there's this younger person and she's a different person. But I also feel really driven to talk about her, and that's more powerful than the pain.
And driven why?
Because other people who leave ultra-Orthodoxy have gone through really horrible things, and I think people don't realize what happens, and I really want to raise awareness about that.
They usually feel terribly guilty. They feel that they had to leave, and at the same time, they're committing all sorts of sins.
Yes, and they're unprepared to deal with the wider world.
My guest is Leah Vincent. Her book, Cut Me Loose, Sin and Salvation After My Ultra-Orthodox Girlhood, it's published by Doubleday in the Nana Talese imprint. Well, now we come to one of the more difficult things to talk about. At one point, you even considered becoming a call girl and put an ad on Craigslist. Do you think that if the dates that resulted from that ad hadn't been such a disaster, you might have actually tried being a prostitute for a while?
Absolutely.
So you just, in an odd way, the bad situation saved you from that?
Yes. That's actually an interesting way of looking at it, but yes.
You, at the time, you thought this would be a way to resolve your money problems. How were you dealing with your money problems?
Well, I was okay financially. I think it was more than money problems. I think it was trying to find a role for myself in the world. And I had been so blown about by all the experiences that had happened. This was something I could cling to. This was the prophecy that I had been told. If I left, I'd become a prostitute. So doing that, in a way, felt easy, in a way that building a career or finding a place for myself in the world was much more difficult for me to do.
Most girls, when they go on their own, their parents don't say, you're going to become a prostitute.
Right, that's exactly.
How much of your life did your parents know about?
Very little. I have been on and out of, in and out of talking terms with them, and I haven't been able to talk about most of these things with them.
And you went through a rather hurtful experience when your sister got married. Your mother insisted that at the dinner before the marriage that you eat on paper plates?
Yes.
Why?
Her idea that somehow, because I was having relationships with men, I would therefore have disease, and therefore eating on paper plates would keep the rest of the family safe. I don't,
Even though the plates would have been washed.
Exactly.
But she was making a point to you.
I think so, yeah.
That you were an apostate.
Yes, and that there was also very important to her to keep me apart from the other children, and maybe she wanted the rest of the children to see that I was different than them.
Were you regretting that you had gone the route you'd gone at this point?
For a long time, I did, yeah.
Then you had an affair with the chair of the English department at your college. He was much older than you, but I get the sense that that's a turning point for you.
Yes. In a way, it was a very healing experience that really helped me overcome a lot of what I had been through and start setting myself on a much healthier path.
Even though it wasn't the healthiest of relationships, he was married.
Right.
And his wife was furious.
Yes.
She blamed you totally.
Yes, as I think often happens with young girls and older men.
And then you went to graduate school. What were you majoring in?
I did a graduate degree in public policy.
You got married?
Yes.
But that's not where you got the name Vincent, is it?
Well, it is from marriage, but not from that marriage. As I talk about in the book, earlier on in the story, I had a roommate who was looking for a green card and needed to get married to get it. And in the state I was in, I thought it would be a good idea for me to make that exchange. He would give me his last name. I would give him a green card. We went through with the marriage, but not with the green card lies. But I did keep his last name, and I really cherish it.
What's your relationship with religion now?
I am a really passionate Jew, and that's very important to me culturally, but I don't practice religiously. I think I'm very engaged with religion because as an activist, I really want to see reform happen.
Well, there are organizations of people who have left various religions because this is something that's very difficult to deal with when you leave a cloistered community, in a sense. Are there yeshivish recovery groups, so to speak?
There's actually only one group.
I don't mean that as an insult to the yeshivish community.
No, I understand. There's only one group, actually, that serves former ultra-Orthodox Jews of every background, Hasidic and yeshivish. It's called Footsteps. It's the only one in the United States.
You got a master's degree in public policy at Harvard.
Yes.
And then you decided to write this memoir?
Yes.
Why?
I made this promise to myself as I was going through the worst of the stuff I describe in the book, that if I survived, I would tell this story. So much of the pain of the story was that I suffered in silence and nobody wanted to hear what I had to say. And I felt like I really wanted to have an opportunity to say what had happened to me. And that was a primary driver. And as I got more and more involved in my activism, I see that other people have their own terrible stories. And I hope that by talking about my story, it'll help other people avoid these kinds of situations.
Well, have people who've read the book talk to you about sharing their stories?
Yes, I hear from a lot of people from all kinds of backgrounds. I think, you know, although I'm talking about ultra-Orthodoxy, a lot of what I'm talking about is a girl becoming a woman. And although my case is extreme, I think it resonates with a lot of women.
I'm assuming your parents have not read the book.
As far as I know, not.
But has the increase in access to information made it harder to keep the secular world separate from the Orthodox world?
I think so. I think the internet is a great tool for anybody who's looking to explore outside of an isolated community.
And I'm assuming that in the community you grew up with, you didn't have a computer and there was no way that you would connect with the internet.
Yes, and when I was growing up, it wasn't as ubiquitous as it is now. But now there are a lot of rules about the internet. If you have it in the ultra-Orthodox community, in the yeshivish community, you have to have all kinds of filters and you can't have a smartphone. So they're trying their best to keep the internet and the wider world at bay.
But do you sense that there is a cultural shift happening? I'd imagine that traditionalists might be really afraid of what's been happening with younger people today.
Yeah, definitely. I think that what has happened is that some ultra-Orthodox people become more open and more kind and generous because of this, and some really stick to their fundamentalism and take the opposite route.
Now, the subtitle of your book is Sin and Salvation. So do you feel that you've been saved?
I do. It's a little bit dangerous to say. I do. I say it's dangerous because I don't think you go through this kind of experience and ever totally lose your scars, and they're just still part of me, but definitely I feel saved.
When you publish things in the Jewish Daily Forward, what kind of reaction do you get?
There are a lot of ultra-Orthodox yeshivish people who are very unhappy when people talk about things that they don't want to hear about, and so you get people attacking. I get people attacking me. On the other hand, I get people really excited and interested to start these conversations and see change happen.
Well, I'm sure some people also see just how confused you were.
Yes.
And say, see, this is what happens when you leave the community.
That was the big danger in writing this book. Like, I'm proving you right. You know, I'm doing exactly what you said. But I hope that they'll understand that the terrible things happened because of that prediction, and that, you know, when I went on to overcome that, and I hope that there are some lessons to be learned from that.
And what kind of work do you do as an activist? Because you self-described as an activist.
Yeah. So I work on empowering the community of former ultra-Orthodox Jews. I'm on the board of Footsteps. I'm also involved in pushing back against the cover-up of sex abuse in the ultra-Orthodox community.
And that has been a problem. We hear about it in the Catholic Church, but
yes.
There is also, but we did hear about some scandals in Brooklyn where
yes.
The community actually turned on the people who complained about sex abuse instead
exactly.
of on the abusers.
Exactly. And former ultra-Orthodox Jews are actually positioned really well to be ambassadors to explain what needs to change and try to help move that change along.
Leah Vincent's book is called Cut Me Loose, Sin and Salvation After My Ultra-Orthodox Girlhood. It is published by Doubleday in the Nan A. Talese imprint. And I thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you for having me.